The world we know is changing. Welcome to Biotech Nation. Today on Biotech Nation, the focus is Alzheimer's disease. First up, technology that offers a more precise, dynamic view of the human brain, as well as one company's approach to treatment. It centers on the brain's ability to take up glucose. Early diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease has always been challenging, while measuring the success of potential treatments has been subjective. Today's technology, with its ability to precisely observe the state of the brain, may change all that. Kevin Cox is the CEO of Immunova.
It is. I think it's really been helped by the development of, what we call imaging biomarkers, in particular for the hallmarks of dementia, in particular Alzheimer's. That's the so-called beta-amyloid plaques and the tau tangles. And without creating the biomarkers to do this type of imaging, then we wouldn't have any idea about what's going on inside the brain.
Now, for years, people said we couldn't tell until afterwards.
Exactly. So it's always, by then, I think most of the clinical trials that have failed in part because they've been taking in patients at too late a stage before they can really have any impact on the disease. So the use of imaging allows us at a very early stage to, in a way, identify which patients are most likely to be able to respond to the drugs that have been developed, because they're being developed primarily to impact the amyloid plaques in the brain. So there's no point in somebody going to a clinical trial if they don't have those amyloid plaques in the first place. And the only real way you can determine whether the people have these is through the use of imaging and these new imaging agents.
Now, what kind of imaging are we doing? How does it work?
We are using PET imaging and MRI. So PET imaging, positron emission tomography, it's a very sophisticated technique where we basically radio label a molecule and we inject that into the human being or the subject, allow it to distribute around the body. Ideally, it crosses the blood-brain barrier and gets the particular target in hand. You can then image that and reconstruct the images so you can actually identify at a molecular level where the problem lies within the brain in particular.
So you know where it went inside your brain.
You do. So we often come across the terminology, the so-called three pillars of drug survival. And that is that does the drug get to the tissue? Does it get there at the right levels and do anything? And ultimately, does it have any impact on the disease processes? And many drugs have been developed without having that knowledge. And without that knowledge, you're more prone to failure. So the use of imaging could help you to address those three questions and have more confidence then about taking a drug through to later phase clinical trial.
Well, I know here in the United States, we have over 100 drugs looking at Alzheimer's. Many of them have been around for 10 years. They say, let's try this, let's try that. Part of that has to be they can't really see what it's doing.
I think that's absolutely right. The current drugs that are being investigated quite vigorously at the moment are the so-called BACE inhibitors, and they are particularly addressing the pathway to the creation of these beta amyloid plaques. And they've had a few knockbacks, not surprisingly, because they haven't had a good understanding about which patients to be taking into the trial and which patients are likely, therefore, to respond to the drug. We hope, therefore, that the use of imaging can help to select and enrich the patient population with those people that actually do have beta amyloid in the brain. Then the drug, of course, as it's targeting beta amyloid, is more likely to have an impact on those particular individuals.
Now, in the UK, there's a major effort going on to around dementia.
Indeed. I think it's interesting. Worldwide, there is a lot of talk nowadays about the renaissance of neuroscience, and obviously driven by the levels of dementia and the aging population. And the UK in particular, I think, has had a lot of government backing. So the Prime Minister has been very positive about the need to treat dementia and to avoid the costs, of course, of the aging population. And so he has set up a number of initiatives which have been very helpful from our business in particular, because imaging plays a very important part of this. So the sort of things that have been happening in the UK, one is there's been a fund set up, so a venture fund, which is in part backed by the government, but also through charity funding and private funding. And this has really been set up to enable early stage drug research, and so helping to support that the lack of resources that have been there previously. The other thing that the UK government has done is create funded very heavily into something we call the Dementia Platform, or DPUK. And part of that is to create a network of imaging centres across the UK which can support recruitment of patients to go into drug trials.
A lot more places they can go in and get their head examined.
Get their head examined by the latest technology.
But we know more about candidates going into the trial.
Exactly. So they can get involved in trials and know that they're going to be able to be, in a sense, have a positive outcome because they have been imaged appropriately. But these imaging centres, there are going to be 5 across the UK. They're using state-of-the-art combination technologies. So they're combining together this PET technology with the more traditional MRI simultaneously. So you're not having to do one image and then move a patient and do another image. You can actually do them both at the same time. It makes the whole patient experience a lot better. The whole trials become a lot easier. And so we've invested very heavily in creating centres where people can come to have that type of imaging.
What do you see with PET and what do you see with MRI?
PET is looking at the disease at a molecular level. So you're actually looking very specifically where the drug is going inside the tissue. And obviously in this case, we're talking the brain. MRI is looking at more of a sort of a functional measure, a macro measure of disease. So you can see things more precisely, but it's actually not down at the molecular level. So it's actually looking at things almost at an organ level. You can determine whether or not, for example, there might be lesions in the brain or brain atrophy. What you can't determine is whether the drug is specifically going to the part of the brain where you want it to go.
So you need them both.
You need them both. And they're very complementary technologies.
With these kinds of technologies, do we have enough experience to be able to detect early dementia? Or maybe that's like you a state where you would progress toward dementia?
I think it's a very interesting question. One of the reasons we are still struggling to find a cure for dementia, I think, is we really still do not understand the biology of the disease. We think we understand it. There have been various hypotheses about how disease progresses and what are the main toxic agents in the disease. But I think it's fair to say that most people are still of the view that we have a lack of understanding of the fundamental biology of dementia or any type of neurodegenerative disease. Increasingly, people are now beginning to, in a way, open some of the insights into the whole disease by using, for example, imaging to help to identify what are the pathways of disease. And one of the holy grails is to try to identify at a very early stage those people that are transitioning into a disease process. Clinically, it's very challenging. You're relying upon assessing people from an external perspective. If there is a way in which you can identify molecularly and biologically when disease is beginning to occur, then there is greater likelihood of following disease and obviously determining whether or not a drug is having impact on disease. And I think that's an area of interesting research. And in our case, for example, we're looking at very early markers of disease to try and determine whether or not they do give an indication of whether there is the pathway to a disease beginning to occur.
Ooh, early days yet.
Very early days, yes.
Do a few things, yes. Then you got to wait.
Yeah. But interestingly, when you look across the industry, so a lot of people are focused very much on these so-called BACE inhibitors, and that's really where the big money is going at the moment, and we're all fingers crossed that something successful is coming from it. But because of this general renaissance in the interest in dementia, people are also investigating other mechanisms of disease as well, which may be complementary. They may actually treat the pathways which other areas are just not considering at the moment. Now, that's what the exciting thing is that it's not just looking at one mechanism, it's looking at many different mechanisms. And if we can just get a little bit of success to give an impetus behind the whole industry, then I think we're onto a very exciting future.
Well, Kevin, always exciting. Please come back. Keep us updated, won't you?
I will, of course, indeed.
Kevin Cox is the CEO of Immunova. More information is available at immunova.com. While many of the treatment candidates in Alzheimer's disease have targeted plaque formation, some efforts have considered other mechanisms of disease. Dr. Charles Stacey is the president and CEO of Axera.
The last drug compound approved or drug class approved in Alzheimer's disease was 2003. So part of the reason they say that there's been this huge number of failures over the last 10 plus years has been because this focus as an industry on this particular target, this plaque. So we as a company address one of the alternative mechanisms, one of the different mechanisms that is known to be fundamental to the disease. So it's known that in Alzheimer's disease, for many years before symptoms are seen and the patients are diagnosed, patients have a decrease in the brain's ability to metabolize. So for some reason, the brain is not using the main fuel, which is sugar. So the brain is the most...
getting nothing to eat.
Exactly. No, it's exactly right. So the brain is the most metabolic organ in the body. It uses about 20% of the main fuel, which is glucose, which is sugar. And consequently, if the brain is unable to use the sugar, then it has a problem. And it starts to go into this dysmetabolic state, this dysfunctional state. And eventually that leads to the symptoms that manifest as Alzheimer's disease. And that's the mechanism that we address.
Now, this is what's called glucose uptake. And so can we measure the uptake of glucose in a brain?
Do yes. we know? Yes, we
How
can.
How do we do that?
So from a research perspective, this research has been done, you know, many years ago, not by us. It's been done by independent researchers that have shown that by using particular tracers and using PET imaging, you can label glucose and you can show that in certain parts of the brain, those parts of the brain that are affected in Alzheimer's disease, the uptake and the utilization of glucose is decreased. And what's staggering is that occurs decades before patients are diagnosed. So patients are diagnosed in their 60s. So this, you can see this effect happening in patients in their 30s. You can start to see this decrease in glucose metabolism, this inability to use the glucose of the brain, which shows that, you know, this is starting many, many years before patients are diagnosed. And so at Xcera, I mean, this metabolic deficit is, as I said, well established. And what we do is we say, well, if the brain can't use its main fuel source, glucose, then maybe we can provide it with an alternative fuel. And in all of us, our bodies are designed that if we have low levels of glucose, we can use a backup fuel. And that fuel is called ketone bodies. So in all of us, if we go through a period of starvation, even if it's a short starvation, like we wake up in the morning, we haven't eaten overnight, our bodies break down our fat reserves. The fatty acids are broken down in the liver to ketone bodies, and those ketone bodies provide the brain with energy. Because to survive, we as human beings need to keep the brain functioning. So what we do at Xcera is our lead compound, AC1204, is a specialist form of fat, which is taken by the patient once a day, and that's broken down by the liver to ketone bodies. And those provide the brain cells with a source of energy where they can't utilize glucose, they use these ketone bodies, and we restore metabolism and in turn prevent the cascade that leads to Alzheimer's disease.
So you're still not being able to do the glucose uptake,
exactly,
but
right.
You've got the alternative, and that path may in fact work.
Exactly right. Exactly right. So we as a company have taken this hypothesis through, you know, over the last 12 years, we've taken it through the classic stages of drug development. We've been through phase two, and we're now in the final stage of drug development, which is phase three. And our first of our phase three studies is due to read out in December of this year. So fingers crossed.
That's a long road. How many years from start to?
Yeah, so for us, it will be over 10 years. So it will be almost, you know, 13, 14 years. Drug development is a long path, and it needs to be. It has to go through rigorous investigation and rigorous processes to ensure safety and efficacy.
Let's talk about this phase three study. What exactly are you doing? What are you looking to the patients to do?
So in Alzheimer's, trials really look at two things. They need to show both an improvement in cognition, which is the clarity of thinking and the ability of the patients to recall and remember things. But also, Alzheimer's is known to have an effect on function. So because of that deficit in cognition, they have an inability to function on a day-to-day basis. So clinical trials in Alzheimer's test two things. They test the ability to improve function, but also the ability to improve cognition. And that's what we've done. So our first of our phase three trials was called the Nourish AD trial. And that was a 6-month study. So it tested patients on the investigational product for 6 months. And then it tested during that time patients' improvement or hopeful improvement in cognition and function.
Now, we're talking about Alzheimer's patients. Mm. They do not have the ability to make agreements, give permissions.
Yeah.
How do you enroll these patients in studies and treat them and give them all the rights they're entitled to?
Yeah, no, it's a difficult process, and it is challenging. As I said, we need drugs in Alzheimer's disease, and therefore to get new drugs, we need to do the clinical trials. And, you know, one of the main challenges is getting patients into these studies. As you say, these patients by definition are elderly, they're often frail, they don't like to venture out to go to new places, and therefore, you know, it is a challenge. And I think that, you know, we as a company have spent a lot of time, you know, addressing this problem. And I know it's a systemic problem across companies that are addressing, you know, trying to develop new drugs in Alzheimer's disease. And the way to do it is, you know, is to educate, tell patients about it, tell caregivers about these things, tell them, you know, inform them about what a trial is like, what it takes to get involved in a clinical trial, and eventually understand that the only way to move this science forward, the only way to get new drugs is to get involved in clinical trials, be that ours or any of the others.
Frequently in the case of Alzheimer's patients, in fact, the caregiver or someone else has the power of attorney.
That can be the case. It depends upon the stage. So we address mild to moderate Alzheimer's disease. So generally speaking, these patients can give their own consent. As they progress into the more severe stages, and you're exactly right, they'll be, you know, these patients can be, you know, the stages where the disease is so progressed they can't give their own consent. But at our stage, you know, they can give consent, but they are accompanied by a caregiver. Often these patients will still require a caregiver, a family member, or an independent caregiver.
So we're hoping to stop it in its tracks. Is there any chance that you could improve?
So the current trial that we're running looks at the symptomatic improvement. But, you know, the mechanism that underlies our technology, there is hope that it will actually modify the disease. So that's what you're asking, which, you know, will that eventually restore cognition and function and improve the overall disease? And the answer is hopefully. The plan is to run that study after this one and to show that we can modify the disease. But I think that what's important is, you know, to provide new drugs that can treat symptoms initially. I mean, what patients want, and I know from my clinical practice days, that ultimately patients and caregivers want to see the symptoms that are manifesting as part of their disease improve. And that's exactly what our current program with AC1204 addresses.
And we still don't know what causes it.
We don't, no. I think we're getting closer. And as a medical community, we are understanding more and more about Alzheimer's. And but you're right, in terms of the massive area of clinical need, and in terms of, you know, what exactly underlies the disease, then it's still somewhat unknown.
So fourth quarter this year?
Fourth quarter this year.
You'll be glued to your desk.
Exactly right. Yep.
And how long, let's say that's positive, how long before that drug could reach the market?
So we still need to run the second of our phase threes. And depending on exactly how that runs, you know, we're talking about 2020. So it is still a little way off. Drug development is a long process, a long and expensive process. But, you know, I think it warrants, this is a massive area of need, as I said. So,
well, Charles, thank you so much for coming in. I hope you come in and keep us updated, won't you?
I definitely will. Thank you very much for your time.
Dr. Charles Stacey is the president and CEO of Xcera. More information is available at xcerapharma.com. That's Xcera, A-C-C-E-R-A, Pharma, P-H-A-R-M-A, xcerapharma.com. For Biotech Nation, I'm Moira Gunn.
Tech Nation and its regular segment Biotech Nation are produced at the studios of KQED-FM in San Francisco. Executive producer is Matt Gardner. The director of technical production is Monte Carlos. And audio engineers include Howard Gelman, Seal Mahler, and Larry Upton. Our theme music was composed by Anne Nachtrieb-Zesiger and Robert Powell, with title creation provided by NameLab Incorporated of San Francisco. Program information and internet audio is available on the web at technation.com. Tech Nation and Biotech Nation are productions of Tech Nation Media. I'm Paul Landcore.